Hi, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lenox, and Stockbridge. Watching us on the PCTV Select app and on channel 1301. Access Pittsfield on your cable dial. Sean Sayre here with you this morning, and it's Friday. Happy Friday. I'm looking out the window, and I'm seeing blue skies again 2 days in a row. Can't beat that. We are going to be getting up around 70, I guess, again today. We'll hear that in the weather forecast just a minute. And then we have the BCC commencement this evening. Just a quick mention about that. You can watch that program on PCTV on, actually, that'll be on channel 1302, Pittsfield ETV, and it will also be on the Pittsfield PCTV Select app. That's, I think, a 4:30 live program tonight coming to you from Tanglewood, so we're covering that for all the folks graduating from BCC and all of their families. I know they appreciate those productions, so take a look at that when you can. Got a great show here for you this morning. We have Heather McNeese. She is the vice chair of the Pittsfield Public School Committee, and so much to talk about going on in the Pittsfield Public Schools these days, so we'll talk about that. We'll have a whole hour to talk to Heather. So many educational issues to talk about, and we're looking forward to that. First, let's get to that weather forecast and find out what the National Weather Service has in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, partly sunny. A chance of showers this afternoon. Highs in the lower 70s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of rain 40%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Showers, mainly in the evening. Lows around 40. West wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 80%. Saturday, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers in the morning. Cooler with highs in the upper 50s. North wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 40%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Okay, so it sounds like we do have a chance of showers a little later today, so the folks at the BCC commencement should be glad that the event will be at Tanglewood after all, under the shed there, the roof of the shed, so that'll be nice. Not great for taking pictures out on the lawn, though, so hopefully you get a chance to do that without too much rain. All right, welcome to the show. Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, and my guest this morning, Heather McNeese. Thanks for joining me, Heather. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Good morning.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you changing your schedule here for the morning. Tell us about yourself, because I think this is the first time you've been on the Morning Drive with me. Tell us a little bit about your history and how you came to be on the Pittsfield School Committee.
Sure. So I was born in Pittsfield. I've been here my entire life. I have actually lived in the same house since I was 3 years old. I have been, I went to school in Pittsfield, St. Joe I graduated from, and then I worked in Pittsfield for 22 years at Taconic High School. Yeah. Loved Taconic High School, have so many great stories, really helped me to become the teacher that I am, and really helped me to love education as I do. I made a change because of a great opportunity to take a program I had created to another city, another town, and that is Lenox, and this is my fifth year. In Lenox, I teach strategies for success, which I had started at Pittsfield and continue to do today. The main difference is that we've brought it into middle school, and so it starts at a younger age, and I think that it's a really great plan to do so.
Yeah. And both of my kids had you at Taconic High School taking strategies for success. And just for the heck of it, for people that aren't familiar with that program and with that class, tell us what that is.
So it really was the brainchild of Doug McNally, who was the principal at the time. And he just said, look, we've got a lot of things that are really important. We want to put it all into one class. So it started with, originally it was a class that was word processing. Mm-hmm. So we kept the typing portion of it and the word processing.
So we added, might be the first experience students have to keyboarding, right?
Yes.
To typing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And case in point, learning that in ninth grade is a bit late. It should start earlier. So that, adding the computer application, so we do spreadsheets and word processing, desktop publishing. We do presentation skills, so how to properly introduce, have a supporting body, visual aids, and a strong ending to a presentation so that when students have an important thing to say, they have the means and the skill to do so. and hopefully the confidence because they have planned so many times. We do career research and we do self-assessments. The students now, in fact, today I have two interviewers coming to school. Each of my students plan for and go on mock interviews, and it's a competition. So each interviewer meets five separate students and then determines who would get the job. They learn resume writing and how to write cover letters, how to fill out applications, how to research the company online, and then common questions and appropriate answers too. So it really is all encompassing. I rarely have a student say, what am I going to use this for?
Well, that's a real world skill, right? And we hear a lot of people say, my kids are going to school and, you know, they're not going to use 95% of what they're learning there, which isn't always true either.
No.
But the fact is, this is a real practical class, something that they're going to have a takeaway. And even if they, you know, get into any kind of career, it doesn't matter whether you're heading to college or whether you're going into a trade or some other thing, knowing those skills really important.
So important. Yeah. Yes. And I have always felt that it's a privilege to teach it. I think that I'm pretty fortunate to have that be my curriculum.
Yeah, that's great. Were you around with the transition from Taconic High School, from the old building to the new building?
I was, yes. And it was dramatic, much more dramatic than we anticipated it would be. It's easy to get excited by a brand new building and think that that is what you need. However, you realize that it's not necessarily the building that creates the culture. And I think that we missed some things moving across that in retrospect. We just didn't know what we didn't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, students have places where certain things happen and those places disappeared. And even teachers have places where they congregate and where they meet with students. And all of those things just were different. And so embracing the different, of course, is important, but I don't feel like we were quite prepared for it.
With the good comes some bad too, right? But certainly dodging the raindrops coming out of the roof and the ceiling tiles, probably not missed in
absolutely
the new building.
And that new building is beautiful and the shops are fantastic. And so everything it was built for is there. I certainly hope with the transitions that we're anticipating with our middle schoolers making a move, with our fifth and sixth grade making a move, that we're really thinking about the climate and the culture and the sense of belonging that's so important. Because a change of building is dramatic. It does change a lot of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are things that, you know, you can't just educate in a paper bag. I think someone actually made that reference one time. You can educate someone in a paper bag. I'd love to see that happen, but that doesn't really happen, right? You need to have appropriate facilities, but then, of course, you need to have good programs and good policies and everything else that backs it up. So tell us your first impressions now that you've been on the school committee for about 5 months or so. How elected office and public service feels. What are your impressions about that now that you're in it versus, you know, sort of proposing and being a candidate last year?
So it's so much more than I ever anticipated it would be. Before even January came and the big day to make it official happened, I had already developed a new sense of appreciation for people who ran for public office because it was a lot of work. And it's a courageous act to put yourself out there and to take on criticism. And to do so, really, I have no ulterior motives for having this position other than to commit my time to something that I believe in. And so it really was eye-opening as far as even if this doesn't work out, I have a completely different appreciation for public service in general.
What was the most eye-opening thing for you? Was it the amount of time and preparation necessary or public scrutiny? What are the things that surprised you?
So to watch the school committee, you assume that they just come to meetings once every other week on a Wednesday night, and they get there at 6 o'clock, and they go home between 8 and 9 o'clock, and that's their commitment. I did not realize that each school committee member, in addition to being on the school committee, has to be on three separate subcommittees that they meet regularly. I didn't realize what an effort it would be to pour over all of those budget documents. This year in particular was interesting, to say the least, because we had four different budgets to look at.
And you kind of came in at a time when the budget was a difficult one as well, right? There was no surplus. There was no, getting our wants. It was more about keeping the things that we needed.
Exactly. Yeah. To cut $4 million at any point, but to also do the equity-based funding to look at budgets, whether the vote passed that we were going to restructure middle school or not, whether Morningside was going to stay open or not. There were literally multiple budgets to look at every weekend and to understand the ins and outs of all of them.
It's a lot of balls in the air.
So many.
So obviously on the front page of the paper today, we've got a story about the releasing of the PHS report. So we'll get right into that. And so that was a vote or several votes that were taken at Wednesday night's school committee meeting that one of the votes specifically was to rescind an earlier vote. And the earlier vote was to release the separate reports. I guess there are five separate reports. But then there was some confusion, right, about whether the school committee members would first review those reports and then decide to release them. But that wasn't made very clear, right, with the original motion. At least that's what several members of the school committee believe, that they weren't clear about what they had voted on.
Exactly. If you've been paying attention, you know that there was confusion about that vote, that some of us thought that we were voting to review and then make a decision, and some thought that we were voting to, regardless of our review, to release. Mm. And that confusion has just sparked a lot of conversation and division about what the best thing to do is.
I couldn't imagine being in that position and voting to release something that I hadn't reviewed. I just couldn't imagine. So to me, it would be like, well, that there can't be any confusion there. Of course, we're going to review it first. We're going to know what we're going to be releasing and to know also what the ramifications of those things are. There were a couple of legal opinions about what can be released from these reports. They are essentially personnel reports, even though they were an investigative report, kind of a special thing, an unusual thing. It wouldn't have been a normal personnel report done inside the administration, right? This was a little different, but in a way, it still contains all of this personnel information. So the legal experts, the opinions that were laid down were, you can't release this stuff, not at least completely.
Exactly. It would have been irresponsible to release a report that I hadn't read yet. Mm. And so the idea was, I need more information, I need to read through the report, and then I can make a decision. To begin with, my feeling was they shouldn't be released, but I didn't feel that I could say that without having the time to go over them.
Sure.
And so that was my understanding. As we know, that has been disputed. But to just back up a little bit, the process that happened that I've only recently become aware of, back when these reports happened, back when the activities happened and then needed to be investigated, there was a lot of pressure put on the then school committee that is our HR department doing their job? Are we handling all of these activities appropriately? And so because the school committee received that pressure, that's when they hired an outside agency to come in and redo the investigation. So it was really just making sure that our HR department had done what they were supposed to do. They came back and said, we have the same finding that the HR department did. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the money was spent on. And to me, if you want to talk about, was this money well spent? That tells me that our HR department is doing the job that they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Because an outside investigation came in and said the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. At that point, they're personnel reports. Personnel reports are not supposed to be published for the public. And even the fact that a summary was published was not approved by the masses. That was, legal at that point said it might not be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But they did it anyways because there was so much pressure from the public. So I think that as far as I'm concerned in going back and looking at how it was handled, I think that I approve.
Yeah. And of course, that summary report had been taken down for a while over the objection of one of the unions that represent employees in the public schools. And I guess that's been restored now so people can go back and look at the summary. It's a public document once again.
That is what we voted for on Wednesday. I don't know if it is published yet.
It will be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess in closing this out then, knowing that this has gotten to this point, and it feels like maybe this is an end point to this discussion, although one never knows where it could go from here. Are you satisfied that the decisions that are being made at the administration level going forward will prevent some of the issues that you saw reported in these investigative reports. What you saw, and some of it, I'm sure, as it was called, unsubstantiated, there were at least two of the reports that said, no, this stuff did happen and things were appropriately handled. Do you feel like going forward that the children in the Pittsfield Public Schools are safe from something like this happening again?
I feel that our HR department does the work that they're supposed to be doing. And I feel confident that in addition to, because we have added another position, I think our HR department was stretched a bit thin and it was really important that we added another position. But yes, even when it was very slim, they were doing the work. That's what the investigation report said. So I have confidence in them to continue to do the work. And I think the new position will only improve that.
Great. Heather McNeese, my guest here this morning on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. We're talking about, she, of course, is the vice chair of the Pittsfield Public School Committee. Lots of things to talk about here this morning. Some of the sort of tenor of the school committee meetings of late have been tense. I think that's the word I would use to describe most of it. And some of that is, I think, due to a bit of a breakdown in terms of the order of the meeting. And this is just my opinion, but it seems like we have Robert's rules or Demeter's rules as the city council follows so that we can have an orderly execution of the agenda items that are placed on the agenda. And sometimes it feels like those rules are either bent or just trampled on. what's a good solution to that? How can we sort of steer that back to a way where we take down the temperature, I think, as you've mentioned a couple times during the meetings? That isn't that the most efficient way that we can still have these discussions and work through the policies that we need to get through with the school committee?
Yeah, so they have been tumultuous, to say the least, and relatively uncomfortable. I know that I don't perform very well in that level of conversation. The idea being that seven people that are representing the school committee, that each one is supposed to bring different viewpoints, that it's really important for us to hear different viewpoints, that we're coming from different walks of life, and in sharing them and listening to each other, hopefully coming to solutions that are right for students and for teachers. Mm-hmm. And so our conversations are not supposed to be back and forth between each other. The idea is that you're given a moment to speak. You know, when they use words like, I haven't yielded the floor yet, or I yield the floor, it's because you're given time to speak. You speak what it is that you want to say, whatever your opinion is, and then other people get a chance too. But it's not supposed to be a back and forth conversation, dialogue, accusations. Those things are not intended to be part of the conversation. At the end, the conversation ends and each person is then expected to take a vote based on everything that they heard, what they brought to the table, what other people did, and now what they think the best solution is.
Yeah. And ultimately, that is the way things should work. And you have your time. The chair is basically running the meeting to recognize each individual member of the committee to have their say. So an agenda item comes up. Somebody makes a motion and a second to discuss, right? If you don't get a motion and a second, nothing can be discussed. That's generally the way it works.
Exactly.
Once you have that, then the chair can recognize people who want to discuss the issue, and they each have their time. And sometimes you need to go around two or three times to say the things that you want. Maybe your opinion can be swayed by someone else's discussion. Maybe someone else is making a good point, and it comes back around and you say, well, you know, I hadn't considered that point. And so this is the way, you know, I'm going to change my vote or whatever. Lots of things can happen during deliberations. Go ahead.
So I believe that our rules are a little bit different than the city council, but I believe the city council can only speak twice on an issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's wise. You have your initial opinion. If your opinion has changed, then you can be given a second one.
Yeah.
I also wonder, you know, when we have public involvement in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Open microphone.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. They're limited to 3 minutes.
Right.
I don't know if it's wise for us also to be limited. Mm. I mean, the idea, there should be some efficiency in our meeting and in preparing ahead of time. If I know what it is I want to say, I can certainly plan, just like people who are coming up to the mic, to share my opinion in a concise manner. And I just think that especially for the amount of business that we have to get to, limiting how much time we're spending on each one. And if we have to table it and send it to committee because it requires that much more time, then perhaps that's the solution at that time.
Yeah. But those rules are not designed to shut anyone out, right? It's not designed to stop people from discussing, unless, of course, the whole majority of the board decides that to call the question, right? Which is to say, we've had enough discussion, we've gone around on this too much, it's time to vote, right? That's what a calling the question is. But generally speaking, each member has their opportunity to make their point. Now, you know, what was the old saying? If the law is on your side, bang the law. If the facts are on your side, bang the facts. And if neither the law or the facts are on your side, you bang the table. Right? Isn't that the old thing?
I've actually never heard that, but I'll take your word for it.
I'm probably, you know, missing the quote there somewhere. But basically, you get louder when you don't have the law or the facts on your side. But that's not necessarily an effective way to forward discussion or forward policy or to forward the agenda. You have an agenda in front of you.
Right. And each agenda item that we have to get to, some absolutely need to be gotten to in that meeting. Mm-hmm. For instance, if we could not bring order to the meeting and we had to call to adjourn, then we would not have been able to get to read the distribution of families and what districts they would be going to. And so those families would have had to wait two more weeks to find out where they were going because we just couldn't get back to order.
Right.
And that would have been certainly disappointing. And it would have been, I feel like, just a disservice to the community.
You'd have to have a pretty difficult disruption to make adjourning the sort of last option.
Certainly.
Right? It would have to be pretty bad. Usually I think of there's a fire somewhere in the building. You adjourn the meeting, right?
Yes.
There's no option. That would be your very last option to adjourn the meeting. Heather McNeese, my guest, if you're just joining us here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. She is the vice chair of the Pittsfield Public School Committee. An issue came up on Wednesday about open mic, and we're just talking about that. This has, you know, surfaced at the city council level in the past also. And I think the 3-minute limit for city council does make some sense, because if you can't say what you need to say in 3 minutes, maybe, you know, you need to rework it a little bit. Right. There is an efficiency to that. Something about Abraham Lincoln being able to give the Gettysburg Address in less than 3 minutes. If you needed more than 3 minutes, I think Abe Lincoln will have something to say about that. But the fact that it is a one way street. Right. The 3 minutes open mic segment is members of the public can come and address the school committee on whatever topic that they would like. There's no limit to that. But when it comes to being able to have an interactive discussion at that time with the school committee, that was an issue that was raised by one of the school committee members. How do you feel about changing that policy?
So I think that the heart of the concern is that people don't feel like they're being heard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the solution to that is that we have a back and forth conversation. I think that coordinating that conversation and making sure that that conversation doesn't violate anybody's privacy, I just feel like we're getting into some muddy area that is not going to serve us well. So back to the problem in that people are not being heard, I just think that we need to come up with how are we going to address each of the people that speak, that come and take the time and are courageous. It takes, you know, courage certainly to speak in front of the audience. And so we just need a better procedure for how that's going to be. Everybody feels like they've been heard. That doesn't necessarily mean they get the answer that they want, but they get an answer. And I have heard a number of times people are frustrated because they don't feel like they're being responded to.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there could be a procedure whereby after the 3 minutes or whatever is up and questions have been raised, and I'm sure that the administration is taking notes as people are coming up there, right? That it could just be maybe a follow-up of some kind. There were issues raised at the last meeting. Of course, you can't bring up new topics that are not on the agenda. There's a little thing called the open meeting law,
yes,
which does not allow that, because you have to put place measures that are going to be discussed at that meeting on on an agenda, and the agenda has to be published 48 hours in advance so people know what will be addressed at the meeting. That's just a very common thing. It happens all across the state. Mm-hmm. It's a law. So if you bring up a new topic, the school committee can't discuss that at that meeting. Right. Doesn't mean it couldn't be discussed at a future meeting. So that would be maybe the mechanism there somehow where it could be, topics that were brought up could then be addressed and brought back on to a future meeting.
And two topics that were brought up the last time at public comment were put on the agenda mm-hmm. for this meeting. So certainly that's part of it. I also think there was a suggestion that if there are questions that pertain to everyone and the answers are shareable for everyone, there could be a message board mm-hmm. that just says these are the questions that were asked. These are the mm-hmm. answers that are provided. If this is something you were also curious, here's where you can find it.
And I guess just talking about the role of the school committee versus the role of the administration and the school department, the employees, the school committee is a legislative body. It's an elected body. It's really the governance body, right? And the three main things, as we were talking about just before we came on air, that the school committee has to do. You mentioned it earlier, the budget process, mm-hmm. very big deal. Selecting and reviewing the superintendent and then creating policy. Those are kind of the three main things. But you're not micromanaging the department. You're not telling the superintendent specifically on one particular method of hiring someone or what kind of curriculum you're running or anything like that. Those are things that the administration handles.
Exactly. So Dr. Phillips, she has been hired based on her expertise, on her education, on what we believe is her ability to move Pittsfield Public Schools forward. And she wouldn't be in that position if we didn't believe in her ability to do so. Having said that, everybody needs to be oversight. And so mm-hmm. that's our job to evaluate her. And that's right. coming up where she had goals for the year. Most of them were put in front of her. She didn't get to choose. She walked into a lot of things that were happening. I think she's doing a remarkable job and a mm-hmm. courageous job. Some decisions that she's making have really needed to be made prior to now. Mm-hmm. But she is taking a look at every single program that's happening, every single department, and really going through and saying, why are we doing what we're doing? Is it because it's best for students and teachers, or is it because it's what we've always done? And one item at a time is coming up. At this time, I have no reason to doubt her ability to do those things. Mm. And so our job is just to ask the hard questions. And she, for the most part, has the answers to those. And if she doesn't, you've probably heard her say, I don't have the information I need to answer that. But it usually comes up in her superintendent report in 2 or 4 weeks later.
Yeah. And I think also, you can get into dangerous ground by trying to micromanage some of those things, right? The school committee, as you mentioned, already has enough on their plate. The amount of time as basically a volunteer with a small stipend has to put in a tremendous amount of hours and work and preparation, more than anyone sees at the meetings, all the subcommittee meetings, all that work. Taking on the role of also being the administration doesn't really make a lot of sense. But then also you can, by interfering in some of those areas, you can actually be hindering the progress, right? At the review time, that's the appropriate time for a governance body to come in and say, okay, here's what we think you did right. Here's what we think you could do better. And, either move you forward or find somebody else to do the job. That's usually what the school committee does, right?
That's exactly our job. I couldn't have said it better.
So important to know. And those questions that people might have at the open mic segment, sometimes those are questions directed to the school committee mm-hmm. that the school committee could answer. But there might be questions that the school committee can't answer or doesn't have the appropriate facts in front of them, right? That would be difficult to have a live one-on-one back and forth conversation at the open mic period.
Yeah, so we have been, it has happened a number of times since January where emails have been sent to all of the school committee members, all of the administration, and some questions they have absolutely nothing to do with our job. For instance, this is my contracted salary and I'm concerned that it's not what it should be. That's not a school committee question.
Right.
There's really no reason for us to be included in that. I think the reason why people feel the need to do that is they just want to make sure that many people know we're asking this question because we want the people who are responsible for answering it are held accountable. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of things that just aren't in our purview. Mm. I'm not going to apply for a superintendent position. I'm not qualified for that. And for me to act like I am would be inappropriate.
Yeah. I suppose if you got enough comments or questions about one particular topic like that, you would know that maybe there's a problem, right? An issue that needs to be raised or whatever.
Certainly. And then it might end up on the agenda for the next meeting.
Right. Heather McNeese joining me here this morning. We're reaching that top of the hour break, as we always do. We're going to take that right now and get back and talk about some other really important things that the school committee is dealing with, like middle school reorganization, the closure of Morningside School, and also the equity-based funding and budgeting that has really been the theme of this year's budget process. We'll talk about all that with Heather in just a moment. First, let's take that break. This is 89.7 WTBR FM's Morning Drive, and we'll be right back after this. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sandrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at sandrini.com.
Will you be an angel for our WTBR DJs? Every day our DJs are cold, hungry, sad and lonely, and they are crying out for help. For only 30 cents per day, WTBR can provide them with clean studios, microphones, audio board, and much, much more. Go to WTBRFM.com and click the donate button and become a friend of WTBR. For only $8.97 per month, you can put some smiles on these faces. WTBR for the love of radio.
Ready to roll up your sleeves and make a real difference? Join us at Central Berkshire Habitat for Humanity and help build affordable homes right here in our community. Whether you're a seasoned builder or just eager to learn, you'll grow your skills while giving families a foundation for the future. Come build with us. Contact Mike Arnold at 413-741-0233 or email him at planner@berkshirehabitat.org today.
Every Sunday night at 10 p.m., something strange happens to the airwaves of WTBR-FM. It's called The Mix. It is an experience like no other on this part of the planet. Witness a collection of fresh and classic beats that are guaranteed to make you move. The best part is, it is mixed completely live. Uncut, unedited. So, for an exciting end to the weekend, tune your radio to WTBR-FM Sunday nights from 10 to midnight for The Mix.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to the show here on Friday, May 29th. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Looking at about 51 degrees outside right now under sunny skies. Hearing that we might have some showers a little later. Reminder that the BCC commencement is coming to you live this evening, 4:30 from Tanglewood. PCTV will be covering that on the normal channels on Pittsfield ETV channel 1302 and on the PCTV Select app. So check that out when you get a chance. Heather McNeese is my guest here this morning on the show, and we'll be right back to our conversation with Heather right after the weather forecast from the National Weather Service. Here we are.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, partly sunny. A chance of showers this afternoon. Highs in the lower 70s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of rain 40%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Showers, mainly in the evening. Lows around 40. West wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 80%. Saturday, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers in the morning. Cooler with highs in the upper 50s. North wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 40%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
I don't know. I was good on that forecast until I heard the temperatures tomorrow in the upper 50s for a high.
Not good.
But that is, it's May, right? Things happen. It's still May. It's going to be June pretty soon. But yeah, and then we'll be complaining about the heat soon enough anyway. So enjoy it while you can. If you can sleep without the air conditioner or a fan blowing on you or whatever, take it for what it is. Morning Drive here returns, and Heather McNeese, thanks again for being here this morning, talking to us about everything related to the Pittsfield Public Schools. So much to talk about.
Yes, there certainly is.
And so a few of the sort of major decisions that the school committee now is dealing with. Of course, this is a school committee that was sworn in January 2nd or 3rd, whatever date that was, and it's mostly a new committee. You have Dan Elias returning after, I think, 26 or 28 years, and Mayor Marchetti returning from the last session. Everyone else is a fresh face on the school committee. But there were some major decisions made along the way before you guys took office. One of those was the reorganization of the middle schools, of changing, bringing the fifth and sixth graders together. All across the city into one building that's going to be Herberg Middle School or whatever we're going to call it next year. And then seventh and eighth graders will be located at Reed. How did you feel about that? And of course, you also had to make some decisions along those lines. The previous school committee had sort of given the go ahead. But I think this school committee also could have put the brakes on that plan had you realized that maybe we weren't ready to do it. Do you feel like we're ready to do that now?
Well, I think that we're more ready than we were. I still think there's a lot of the hard work that needs to happen so that when the building opens, all of the teachers who are coming together are on the same page. The administration, there's, you know, all the adults need to be well prepared to welcome in all of those students. So I think there's still a ton of work that needs to be done. I'm confident that it will get done. However, I don't want to make it sound like that's going to be easy to get from here to September.
Right. And if that was the only thing that was going on, that would be enough, right? That would be a really, really big thing to have to handle. What about the transportation? That was something that really had to get sorted out first, right? Of changing the tiers of transportation from two different tiers, one that handled the elementary schools and the other one that handled the middle schools and high schools. And now we're going to be up to three. And then you had to change the start times of the schools and things like that. How did that all sort out?
Yeah, so transportation had to be consulted first to make sure that they could physically do what we were asking them to do. If they couldn't, then it was a done deal. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, because that altered contractual times for middle school only, it needed to be negotiated. And because I'm on the negotiation subcommittee, I was part of those conversations. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of concerns around making the high school day start earlier. Nobody really wants for that to happen. The elementary school day to start later again, or to end later. Nobody really wants for that to happen. But for all of the logistics to work, that is what needed to happen.
Yeah.
What it comes down to is a lack of bus drivers. We have positions that are unfilled. We just don't have enough bus drivers to do the number of routes that we need to. And so the final determination was based on that. If we could hire more bus drivers, we wouldn't need to add more time to the day.
Mm. And of course, that's an issue that isn't unique just to the Pittsfield Public Schools. We've seen that issue at the BRTA as well. And they've had severe shortages of drivers, which was curtailing the routes that they could run. And some of the routes didn't get filled and things. So it's obviously an issue that that many organizations are dealing with. So, but transportation, for the most part, you think is sorted now, and there will be minimal disruptions at the beginning of the next school year?
as far as we have heard and the reports that we've seen, I think that they feel confident that they can transport the students. And so they've certainly been doing that job much longer than I have, which is 0 days. So I have to believe that they're qualified to make that decision.
Yep. And then, of course, it's a very complex thing because it also involves agreement from teachers' unions to be able to change those times, right? Because they had agreed to the previous times in the last contract. We're not at a contract negotiation point right now. And those are things that, again, you talk about things that people don't see the school committee members doing. There's always personnel and negotiations going on, right, with things like that. So they needed to midstream agree in principle that they would change their start times and end times. And they didn't necessarily have to do that. That would have put the kibosh really on this whole plan, right?
Yeah, and I would like to give credit to the teachers union because I think in general, they believe that this was a really good choice for education. However, for them to have to change what they've contractually agreed to is asking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that they agreed to that also just speaks a lot for their dedication to what's best for kids.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was a hard decision, and there wasn't a complete, you know, unanimous agreement, as there probably never is with things like that. I'm sure some people would say, no, we're not going to go down that road. And other people are like, well, no, this is going to move us forward. So I'm sure that those were heated discussions. And again, those are things that we don't really, we're not privy to. We don't know. But in the end, they did come out and say, yes, we'll agree to this for now until, I guess, the next negotiation, right?
Yes, it'll be time to start negotiating a new contract soon. And so this is just a 1 year. We need to make this work.
Yeah. Other considerations for putting all the students from the city into one building that way, where you're bringing fifth graders now who used to be in eight different elementary schools. That's probably going to be the biggest change out of all four of those grades, it feels like to me, because those fifth graders maybe were used to being, you know, top dog, if you will, in their school. And now they're after fourth grade, they're going to be moving to one school where they'll have all one grade and everyone will be together there for that grade. Do you feel like that's still a good plan? How will that work forward?
So I think everybody in the fifth and sixth grade school is going to be new to the school.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really unique opportunity that everyone, as long as everyone feels welcomed in the same, which I can't imagine why they wouldn't. I feel like their transition, I don't want to use the word easy because it's not going to be easy, but everybody is in the same boat. It's mm-hmm. not anybody's school more than anyone else's. And so that territorial feeling coming from students, coming from parents, it just doesn't exist because everyone's brand new to the building.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it will be a little bit more challenging in seventh and eighth. There are current 6th and 7th graders in one building that are staying. And then there's 6th and 7th graders who are moving from another building and everyone needs to assimilate. And so I think that the strategies that we use to bring those two schools together will be different than what we need to use for 5th and 6th, which is truly all just new kids from all over the city.
So there might be a little bit of a culture adjustment there.
I think
at the beginning, at least, especially with cohorts, where if you were a cohort with a group of kids, you've got all your friends, your regular folks, and now you've got an influx of a whole bunch of new people coming in, that will feel different in a lot of ways.
I think it will. And I think some of the things that need to happen is what Reed is doing, business as usual, should look different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we need to rebrand a little bit. And because it's just 7th and 8th grade, what's most important for 7th and 8th grade to be doing? And that's what the emphasis would be on.
Well, so let's talk about the educational end of this. Obviously, the whole point of doing this, it's not just, we're just going to throw the cards up in the air and see where they fall down. This is being done for a reason, right? So we want to have good educational outcomes for all of the students in our district. And I think that we've identified over the years that the problems started in the middle school ages. And that's why, in a lot of ways, some parents have decided to choice their kids out of the Pittsville Public Schools around that middle school time. That's been pretty well publicized. So I guess, A, how are we addressing the educational needs of the students? How is this doing them some favors? How is this improving their experience? And B, will it also help with the perception of experience of middle school students here in Pittsville?
So I have so many thoughts. I feel like as you were just talking, I thought of four different routes that I wanted to answer these questions, and I'm going to try to keep track of my own thoughts. First of all, it's not a new new concern that when your children are going to middle school, you're scared. Mm-hmm. I remember the summer before my oldest went to middle school, and I was so nervous. Mm-hmm. The idea of going from this small school and then being, like you said, the top dog to a middle school, which is three times the size, was so scary. And then being surrounded by older kids and all the mm-hmm. things that kids are going through when they're in middle school. I mean, that's not a new fear from a point of view of parents or from students. Right. That's just been perpetuated for a long time. So that first part, I don't think is unique to anyone. I don't think it's unique to our middle schools. I just think that it is the age. Mm-hmm. Middle school is an age. Speaking from my experience as a high school teacher, as a ninth grade teacher specifically, the kids, when they were coming into ninth grade, they were at so many varying levels, had so many different experiences. Mm. And that was really difficult to have them. I don't teach leveled classes. Strategies for Success is the same for everyone. And so everybody is combined, but with huge deficiencies from some groups over others.
So some students would be struggling coming in where other ones would be excelling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was clear immediately. Mm-hmm. And so obviously the hope is to alleviate some of that. Being a skills-based teacher, back to our conversation mm-hmm. about strategies for success, I hope that that's something that we can incorporate with seventh and eighth graders, because my belief, I say this over and over again, but skills-based education gives students confidence because they can say, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as they have that confidence, they feel a level of competence in their ability to do other things. So maybe reading mm-hmm. is difficult for them, but they feel confident at some point during the day because they've built these other skills that support their ability to read better, that support mm-hmm. their ability to problem solve better. And so I would love to see some more skill-based teaching happening in that seventh and eighth grade school.
Hmm. Yeah, so they will be two very different schools that way, that the fifth and sixth grade certainly addressing that transition from elementary school to the higher grades. And seventh and eighth, it seems like what you'll be doing there with Reed is preparing kids to start making those decisions, to have that agency of their own, to find out who they are and what they like to do and where their strengths lie. And they've got another big decision, right, to come when the seventh and eighth grade finishes up now in Pittsfield, because you have two really good high schools to go to. You can choose to apply to Taconic High School for vocational education, or you can go to Pittsfield High School. But those are big decisions that feel like maybe they could be made better now in a school that focuses all the students from the entire district on that choice.
Yes, I think you're right. I attended, there was a college and career fair that happened at Reed. I think that it was in February. I don't exactly remember the date. But they did a really great job of not only having area colleges there to talk about if that's something that you think that you're interested in. They had all different careers there for them to circle through. But then what I also thought was great is they had representatives from Pittsfield High School, from Taconic High School, talking about the programs in the auditorium and helping the students to understand what their options were. So certainly more of that, and really only having to focus that in one building. I have to imagine they did the exact same thing at Herberg. Mm. And so focusing that just at Reed with the seventh and eighth grade, they can do it both years. They can have so much more exposure. And I think that that's a win.
And maybe make it a little less intimidating, right? Everyone remembers as you're coming up through the grades and realizing when you're going to high school, that feels like a huge transition. You know, again, top dog, right? You're eighth grade and, you know, and then you get there and you're like, oh, I'm not anymore.
Right.
I'm learning how this place works. I'm learning how all these new things, you know, that are hitting and all the new expectations that are on me. That's a really heavy thing for kids to get into.
It is. But I would think the better prepared they are for that, the more it feels exciting and as an opportunity than intimidating and scary overall.
Yeah. And so I guess back to the perception question. Now that this will all happen, it'll settle out for a while, I'm sure. Will we be able to see some change in terms of the performance of the schools, which has been an issue, right, for both Herberg and Reed middle schools? And then also for the district's parents, when they're looking at how things are laid out and how things are working, will they come back and say, no, I want to keep my kids in the Pittsfield Public Schools. I want to keep them there for middle school because I like this arrangement. And how do we sell that, right? That's the big question.
Yeah, that's certainly the hope, that we can retain our students, because middle school is when we lose the majority of them. the ones that decide to go out of district. So in terms of how do we sell that, I feel like we have always had a marketing problem coming from a marketing background that we just don't sell what we're doing great. And unfortunately, the news sells where we're tripping over ourselves. And so you start to believe that that's the whole story.
Negative stuff moves at the speed of light, right? Where positive stuff is very slow to get out, unfortunately. And we see that with social media. That's just the way things work. Unfortunately, people get more clicks for the negative stuff. But it doesn't mean that you can't amplify the positive stuff and talk about it, because it's still there and it's still important. People still have students that need a good education and a good experience. And to be able to look back and say, hey, the Pittsfield Public Schools did okay by me.
Yeah.
You know, look at where I am today. And I think you're a good example of that. You went through the public schools, and then you went through St. Joe. So that's a different experience, too, I'll bet.
So my public school experience was limited to Pomeroy kindergarten. And then my mother put a uniform on me and I headed off to Sacred Heart.
Oh,
yes.
All right.
But my own children all went from K through 12 through Pittsfield Public Schools. And they're all thriving and they all had great experiences. They did not have perfect experiences by any means, and they're not perfect children, but they learned what they needed to learn. I think basically when it comes to education, kids need to learn how to read because it's the most important way to educate ourselves. They need to learn how to problem solve, whatever that looks like, and they need to learn how to be good people and how to get along with others. And my three children learned all of that, some the hard way, some the easy way, but they learned that and they're thriving as a result. So Pittsfield Public Schools was part of my village that got my kids to where they are today.
And I would testify the same for my kids who went through the public schools, Capeless and then Reed and then Taconic, both of them, and very happy with the experience for my kids. They graduated. They both then went on and graduated college. Those good outcomes are very, very possible and, doable in the public schools. So people have to hear that once in a while. Heather McNeese, my guest here this morning, is vice chair of the Pittsfield Public School Committee. And we've got a few minutes left of our interview here. Let's shift over to Morningside School because that was another major decision that came your way. That one really, although it has been discussed, I'm sure, for many years about the sort of quality of that building, the age of that building, the design of that building, how that's influencing outcomes for students. And then, of course, this year we get hit with a $4 million funding gap and something has to be done. So it sounds like all those things came together and then the possibility of closing this school came to the school committee, and that was a major decision that you had to make. How do you feel now that you've had a little time since that's happened and some of the pieces are falling into place to make those students end up somewhere good for next year?
So that decision certainly did not come easily. That was, I think, the hardest decision that we've made so far. That my experience with Morningside goes back to me being in high school, walking over to Morningside and tutoring. Hmm. And I don't remember it being a difficult environment, but that was a 15-year-old perception. Hmm. I went there. I worked one-on-one with students to tutor, and I went back to class. So I hadn't stepped in that building since then. So we're going back more years than I'm going to say out loud. And I needed to see for myself really what happened throughout that process. So we had the public hearing, and there were such heartfelt stories, the majority of which were calling for us to keep the school open. And I went home that night and thought, I think that we need to keep the school open. There's just too many people who feel that strongly about it. I'm not ready to say otherwise. After that, after the meeting, I spoke with people, I received emails from people, and my initial reaction was, why didn't you speak out loud at the public hearing? We need to hear your voice too. Because if you just watch that public hearing, you think, well, school committee listened to them and they did what they wanted to do anyways. Mm. And what it came down to, there were a lot of people who had more at stake, and for them to publicly say, I think we need to close the school, if we didn't close the school, would have put their livelihood, not necessarily their livelihood, but their reputation in jeopardy, because then they would still be tasked with the hard work of keeping the building open. And so they needed to do it privately, but they also made their voices heard in a different way. I don't think people realize that. So it was about 50-50. Mm. And so that's when I called and asked if I could spend a day at Morningside and just see for myself. I didn't feel like I could make a decision without doing so. There was a lot of great things going on. Hmm. But what it came down to is that they were working so much harder than they needed to do what schools across the city didn't. They were doing the same thing and just working harder.
So they're kind of put in a disadvantage right away.
Absolutely.
Having to overcome the physical aspects of the building and sort of teaching in a big, wide open area, which I went to high school in such a place, and it's not easy. As soon as my town or city could do it, they changed that whole arrangement. They changed the whole building. It was just a fad when they built those buildings, and nobody's built them since.
Right. And it just wasn't, especially the large number of English language learners that we have. I mean, they're decoding everything. And so when you think about their capacity to do that with all of this background noise, you're really limiting their ability to focus in on, you know, not just language, but math is now a different language and science is a different language and all of the decoding that needs to happen with all of that background noise. Yeah. It's just not the best environment.
Are you happy with the plans for the redistricting of sending the kids who were going to Morningside, of course, only the K through 4, because the fifth graders will all be going to Herberg anyway, where they'll be headed and whether drawing the lines on the map made sense the way that they did?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a difficult transition for all of the kids. And so I don't want to downplay that at all. I don't want to say, yeah, this is so simple, because it wasn't. There were a couple of different options, and at first I thought the option that moved the most people was the best because the idea of it being the Morningside students wouldn't be the only new people in the building. There'd be a lot of new people in the building. The new lines would actually make transportation routes easier because they just make more sense.
So in other words, changing the line so that maybe kids from another school like Allendale would end up at Capeless in addition to some Morningside students, right?
Exactly.
Like that, where the lines for the entire city would change.
Exactly. Yeah. And so my thought process was just, it really will not just make Morningside students new. Mm-hmm. There's those Morningside students, and it would make new for a lot of people.
Yeah.
The end decision, it was recommended by the administration, and really we agreed, was that we need to disrupt the least number of people so that we can focus on the Morningside students so that they get our full support in welcoming and making sure that we can meet their needs. Mm. And I think that makes the most sense. But there was a lot of conversation, again, that nobody really hears prior to. Mm. We just vote quick and we move on. It's not because we haven't had multiple meetings and multiple conversation about what's best. Mm-hmm. But I do think those lines are going to be readdressed in the future.
Yeah.
Once everybody settles, we have said we're not moving Morningside kids again. That's not going to happen. Where they are is where they will graduate from. Mm-hmm. However, we do need to look at those lines. And, you know, larger cities do it every single year.
Yeah.
We're just used to the way things always are here in Pittsfield and trying not to make any changes.
Yeah, it does seem like something that should be reviewed every year, especially with the change that we'll be seeing. And, you know, we didn't even really get a chance to talk about the upcoming Conte and Crosby building project that's moving forward. So far, I think the final decisions haven't been made, but it's rolling down the track for sure. It's probably going to happen, having that kind of state support for that school building and, you know, investing in brand new buildings as much as we talked about Taconic earlier. You have to do it once in a while, right? You can't leave a 50, 7500 year old school functioning because the building may still function, but the educational functions inside may not work anymore. And I'm sure that'll have to be addressed when it comes to looking at Pittsfield High School as well. There's lots of things like that I'm sure you'll be discussing in the future years.
Yeah. So I am the school committee representative for the school building needs committee. Mm. So if you want to have me back in a few months and we can talk about it,
yeah.
I'm new to the committee. And so I would love a little bit more time to have an educated voice on all of that.
I think we could probably do an entire half a show on that.
Absolutely.
And how important it is to invest in our schools as much as, and you know, we could have the mayor on talking about how the debt service works also, because that's another whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get to equity-based funding and budgeting. Boy, an hour goes by so fast here. Heather McNeese, thanks so much for joining me this morning. It was a great conversation. We got to flesh out a lot of the issues that are facing the schools and also our families and students. So we appreciate all the hard work that you do on the school committee, and thank you for that.
Okay.
I kind of hit that a little hard, but sorry about that.
Thanks so much.
All right, well, thank you for being here, and we will definitely have you back in a few months to discuss those other issues.
Great, thanks.
All right, everybody, have a great weekend out there. Morning Drive will return again on Monday live with Brian Burka. He'll have a guest here here in the studio that morning. Have a great weekend, and congratulations to all of our BCC students graduating today. Take care.